Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Certainly something that our listeners need to know about, and that is the latest and not good news when it comes to Julian Assange, who we've been following his story ever since he was, I mean, since before he was put into, or he put himself into the Ecuadorian embassy in the United Kingdom to escape from persecution from the Swiss, I think it was, that were going after him in that case. And then ultimately staying there to avoid the UK government snatching him up, which ultimately they ended up getting him a couple of years ago, if I recall correctly, and then putting him into, I believe, Belmarsh, like a high security, maximum security prison there, as he was awaiting a hearing on whether or not the UK government would extradite him to the United States. So he's been wanted by the Swiss government. He's been wanted by the UK government, which, by the way, he served his quote-unquote time for the UK, but they still didn't let him out because the United States government wants him now. These gangs of criminals all across the world, and the U.S. government, what do they want him for? Well, because, number one, he's never been to the United States. He's from, I believe, Australia, and he's never set foot in the United States. They say his actions put lives in danger, and they accuse him of 18 counts, meaning he is facing 175 years in prison. So I imagine they're going to put him in the same cell block with other peaceful people like Ross Ulbricht, who's facing two life sentences plus 40 years for running a website. Basically, Assange also facing more than life in prison for running a website. That's job was to tell the truth, to reveal the truth to people who are being kept in the dark by mainstream media and these government gangs all around the planet. That's what WikiLeaks was doing.
Yeah, and the crazy thing too here is that, like, even like it wasn't him alone did not cause any danger, right? Like, it took other people to do things that were risky, right? Like, they already took risks. For example, the people who were...
Like Chelsea Manning or then Bradley Manning?
No. I mean, so the accusation, as I understand it, like, the harm that was supposedly caused is that it revealed names of people who were working with the United States government, right? Mm-hmm. So the problem here is, though, these people already took those risks, right? Like, it wasn't just this guy publishing this information. It was other people, including the United States government, who put those people in risks.
They put that information in a place where it could be acquired.
Right. And there's also that, too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, like, it's such a stretch to say that he put people, in harm's way.
You know, one of the scariest things about what's happening to Julian Assange is that it just goes to show the U.S. government gang, they can get you almost anywhere. And certainly in a place like the UK, where they're highly connected with the UK government and, all kinds of interlocking agreements between the various different bureaucracies and such, there might be some corners of the planet where it's difficult for them to find you. But, man, I mean, this dude, Julian Assange, never been to the United States, and he's facing prison here.
Yeah, if anybody has any doubts about whether or not, like, the United States is effectively in control of the UK, all one has to do is look at the one-way... the one-way, I want to say exchange, basically that goes on with extradition. It's a one-way extradition is what it is. So people, the United States can extradite people from the UK, but it doesn't work the other way around.
It doesn't work the other way around?
It doesn't work the other way around. It only works one direction. Yep. So if you ever wonder, does the United States own the UK? I mean, again, this
why
is...
Why wouldn't the U.S. turn people over to the U.K.? It would seem like something they would scratch each other's back on. Are you sure about that?
Yeah, and it has to do, I think, with the fact that there was basically an agreement. And so I want to say a trade agreement. It's obviously not a trade agreement, but, a treaty.
According to VanityFair.com and their story about this, in 2019, Assange was indicted by the Justice Department, so-called, with 17 counts for violating the Espionage Act in 2010 for his role in publishing leaked U.S. military secrets related to Iraq and Afghanistan, charges that have alarmed press freedom advocates. Since then, Assange has been on the run, although I wouldn't really call it that. He's been sitting inside the Ecuadorian embassy for most of that time, and then subsequently after that, he has been in the UK jails.
Yeah, it's kind of humorous considering that the United States and various other Western countries have harbored fugitives, so to speak, in certain, like, I guess it would be like communist countries in the past. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about, like, for 20 years kind of harboring in their embassies. So it's kind of funny how it's like the way they're phrasing it as being on the run. It's like, I'm pretty sure they didn't say that when they were protecting, you know, some other, you know, group of people in, you know, I'm trying to think what they would phrase them, like dissidents or whoever it was that they were protecting.
People seeking asylum or that sort of thing.
I don't know about asylum. Yeah, I mean, probably that.
The chilling effect is already in play because the U.S. government gang is going after a man whose job was to reveal the truth about what these government people are doing.
Yeah, I mean, the mere prosecution, you know, the mere threat of prosecution is enough, really.
Yes.
Because no journalist is going to want to have to spend years, you know, fighting a case where they could potentially serve some serious jail time over.
Yeah, so, you're right about that. Most journalists, and it shouldn't be that way. Most journalists, though, they want it easy. You know, they don't want to actually go up against the government. They want to report about the government.
And
right?
It's interesting. You know, cops get immunity when they kill people. Why shouldn't journalists effectively get the same sort of treatment? And I don't necessarily mean for killing people.
For revealing the truth.
Yeah, for revealing the truth. It would seem to me that if you're a journalist doing your job, you should get greater immunity. I mean, the cops shouldn't get the immunity from killing people, but they should get greater immunity than the cops, right? So,
yeah, that's a great point. And that would be a real indicator that you truly live in a free press country.
If you're prosecuting reporters, like, right off the bat or threatening, I mean, right off the bat, that seems to be like a country to me that is like F. You get an F, right? Yeah. As on the freedom scale.
Yeah. I mean, this year they raided our studios.
Yep.
March 16th of this year, just a few weeks ago, they raided, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago, they raided Project Veritas. Mm. They raided their reporters' apartments, and then they raided the founder of Project Veritas like 2 days later. And so those are just two more recent examples that they're still doing this. And as you pointed out, Chris, this is going to, if there were any people in the mainstream media who are thinking about reporting on the truth about the federal government, they're thinking twice now.
Oh, yeah.
Because who wants to go, you know, spend time in prison? Most people don't. Most people aren't willing to, quote unquote, fight the good fight, you know, to get out there and actually put their necks on the line for what they believe in. They should, because if the majority of reporters and the majority of local domestic press organizations had the level of courage of someone like Julian Assange, then it would be a completely different situation in the United States. Because then you would have, everywhere you turned, you'd have, like, incisive, important investigations into the U.S. government gang and, like, the horrors of what they're doing to peaceful people out there. But instead, you just got a bunch of reporters that went to government college filleting the state and just doing whatever it is that they're told to do, reporting word for word government press releases and things like that. This is, again, VanityFair.com, pointing out that the U.S. government is endangering the ability of the media to bring to light uncomfortable truths and expose official crimes and cover-ups, read a Friday editorial in The Guardian, which is not based in the United States.
Mm.
One of the first outlets to publish the revelations from the WikiLeaks cache, The Guardian said further, quote, "The decision is not only a blow for his family and friends, who fear he would not survive imprisonment in the United States, it is a blow also for those, all of those, who wish to protect the freedom of the press," unquote. Jameel Jaffer, the director of the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University, says that, quote, "This doesn't matter whether Assange is a journalist. This case will have far-reaching implications for press freedom." And that's an important point. You don't have to be a journalist to be the press. Yeah, the sort of classic definition of a journalist is somebody who is unbiased and they attempt to get all sides of whatever the issue is and report from all sides. We don't see a lot of journalism out there in the United States at all these days because most of the so-called news organizations have an obvious bias. And I'm okay with that. You know, as long as it's clear what your bias is, fine. You know, I mean, let us know who you really are. Let us know what you actually believe. That doesn't bother me at all. based on this particular case you're referring to, or one of these computer crimes laws, you're saying they have outlawed, and it still stands, the ability to share how to crack a thing. Some sort of digital security.
Yeah. It's, I mean, theoretically, even us talking on the radio about how to crack something, like if I tell you to go download VLC and VLC has the capability of cracking, say, DVDs, that theoretically would be criminal under the law, under, you know, if you interpret it broadly enough. But yeah, I mean, it's basically anything that you communicate to that would, you know, help somebody crack.
So what they were doing back in the 80s with the different tones that they were, you know, expressing to people, like, you know, remember
Theoretically would be illegal too, because
so just for listeners that don't know, and that back in the old days you used to be able to hold up like a little speaker with a specific tone that it could play into a payphone, and then you could get like free phone calls because you were essentially tricking the phone system into thinking you were putting quarters in.
Yeah,
basically.
And that's probably a different law. I suspect the computer crime law, whatever, would also make that criminal, but that's criminal under other laws as well. Yeah. So yeah,
but that's what 2600 used to do, right? Because 2600 is named after one of those tones, isn't
it? Well, yeah, it is.
Right.
But remember, 2600 didn't do that. 2600 is just a magazine.
You are somebody who might pay attention to what the old school retail kings are up to, and apparently they're up to no good governmental related shenanigans.
Yeah,
right?
You could definitely say that I pay attention to laws and rules and things like that that the government implements that effectively are intended to increase the cost of doing business and increase the cost for at least certain merchants or types of merchants. And this is basically one of these, you know, ridiculous, you know, rules.
Well, because it's not bad enough that they're inflating the money supply and dramatically increasing the prices of pretty much everything, including shipping, which it all factors into higher prices that customers have to pay to get things.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've already, there's probably two key things that have increased the cost of basically online retail shopping for consumers. One is that online retailers are now required to collect sales taxes. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, it doesn't matter what state you're in. All right. Even in New Hampshire, you have to collect sales taxes for people who buy
from outside
goods from you from outside the state, even though you don't operate in
their state. And is that a federal rule?
That was a Supreme Court ruling.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah. And fortunately, in New Hampshire, you know, as a consumer, you don't have to deal with that because there's no sales tax here. But
what happens
in almost every other state, you do.
What happens to you if you don't? Are they going to send the FBI after you?
This is a good question, and it's not entirely clear. You've also got different laws. Like, for example, if you install Ethernet cable, right, or like telephone cable or something of that nature, right, inside a wall for somebody, the cable itself has a different tax rate than whether or not you install it outside of the wall, right? Okay. And this is on the cable, not the service. So, right? And now think about this. Now, there's 10,000 different taxing jurisdictions. So somehow you're supposed to...
I'm surprised it's that few. I would think it'd be even more than that.
Right. So somehow, if you're a online retailer, you're supposed to ask the question of, are you going to install this cable inside the wall or outside the wall? And I've never seen any retailer ask that type of a question. But
sure.
In theory, that's
the law.
Well,
because you may not
even know. That's the law in the state. Yeah, and it gets better.
You just might be buying a cable.
It depends on what day. In fact, that whether or not you have to collect that tax.
You're talking about in Louisiana.
In Louisiana. But this is also applicable for states like New York.
Yeah,
of course. Because they have something called tax holidays. So, mind you, if theoretically, they could probably go after you for a crime if you don't follow the law correctly here. So if you collect a tax, right, and you weren't supposed to collect a tax.
On a tax holiday.
Right. You're now committing a crime, theoretically, right? They could theoretically go after you, right? Now, they won't, probably, because they want that money. But the point is, they could go after you for anyway.
Sure.
And these massive retailers like, you know, Amazon and everybody, basically, they're all committing these crimes because they're not actually complying with the law. It's just the appearance of complying with the law, because actually complying with it would be so absolutely insanely complicated, it's not possible.
I wanted to let you know that I was coming down with something. It felt like a stomach flu. Mm. And I did get my flu shot. But one of the things I have been using was tea tree oil from Australia. And I mixed it with water and I sprayed it all over my body and my head and my bottom of my feet, and I think it has really helped me to clean out my nasal passage, and it helped me to breathe better, and it got me feeling well.
Now, I don't know a whole lot about this particular product that you're referring to. Is that the standard way of using it, is to spray it all over your body? I have never heard of that.
Well, you know that what the scientific name of that oil is, Melaleuca alternifolia. But the Aborigines, they call it tea tree oil, because when they found Aborigines making teas out of it and drinking it. So I have a tea version of that, too. I've been drinking their teas also. So the thing is to get it into your bloodstream, and by spraying it, like I spray it under my armpit, and there's pores on top of your head, and I sprayed it, and I sprayed it on the bottom of my feet. And so
that sounds expensive. Is this stuff expensive?
Well, I think most of the stuff is in health food stores.
Uh-huh. Brick and mortar definitely does not like online retail, and I don't think the online retailers have as much of an issue with the brick and mortar, because the costs of operations are lower with online retailers. Mm-hmm. So it's more of a, you know,
disadvantage?
The online retailers they have an advantage over the brick and mortar,
yeah,
up until the point in which you pass laws that actually make it absolutely insanely expensive to operate an online retailer. So, there was one other thing, though, too, I wanted to mention. Tariffs. Sure. Tariffs are, for people who aren't aware,
import-export.
Yeah, you're basically the businesses are basically paying 25% right now for not everything, but a good chunk of goods from overseas. So, and everything's manufactured overseas. So your costs, like to the consumer, is about 13%. That's basically, you know, you're losing 13% of your wealth, basically, every time you go out and buy something as a result of those tariffs. This is something that did not exist, you know, a few years ago. So
how does 25% go to 13%?
So that's 13% on average, like overall. Like if you walk into a Walmart, the prices are gone up by about 13% overall. But it doesn't necessarily apply to every product. But that doesn't necessarily mean the retailer has increased the price on a product by 25%.
I was just wanted to comment on what Sarah was saying, and I don't think it's a tea. I think it's just, yeah, you put the tea tree oil in some warm water and you gargle it, and that's what helps clears out anything that's in the back of your throat. So you don't actually drink it.
Well, that's, she was saying that she was drinking it and wiping it all over her body. So I guess different people have different methods to use this.
Well, I heard it from my grandmother and my great grandmother, and tea tree oil, you can rub it on rashes and stuff like that, and it'll help subside those effects on rashes.
And have you used it personally?
Yes, I have.
Okay. All right. Well, like I said, you know, there's a lot of interesting alternative therapy treatments out there, and I'm not going to say one way or the other whether which ones work and which ones don't. I think everybody's different, and, you know, one treatment might work for one person and might not work for another.
Yeah, like you get a little scratch in your throat or whatever, and, you know, one of us want to put, like, a couple drops of tea tree oil in it.
A lot of the counterfeit stuff is like, it really is garbage, but there are certain counterfeit stuff that is like, there's nothing wrong. Like it just doesn't work as long or something. And it's kind of what you're going for.
With the Shoopies that I got, you could get like, and actually I found them originally at like a flea market. So I wasn't even buying them online. So I just had them at a flea market, and you could get like, I don't know, 20 of these pens for the cost that you would normally pay for one Sharpie at like an office supply store. And some of them were completely dried up and just completely useless, or the actual tip of the pen was just in bad shape. It like wasn't pointy, or it just was terrible. But there were still a handful of them that were in decent shape, and some of them I've still got. I still use them.
This kind of reminds me of there's these I don't know if you call them counterfeit really, but they're I'm sure they would be called counterfeit, and they sort of are, I guess, in some respects, but not necessarily. So they're basically chips that emulate they're sort of serial cables, but they're for like programming routers. Mm-hmm. And the chips themselves, they're to a certain like specification that meets another company's product that then can use, in order to use it on Windows, you have to use their driver, this other company's driver. Mm-hmm. But on Linux, you don't.
So, Chris, you're telling us that major retailers are pushing Congress for another law to regulate and control online retail, which, of course, is their competitor. Now, they yep. have online sales as well, but if they can eliminate people like you, like ThinkPenguin.com, if they can eliminate smaller mom-and-pop businesses...
Yeah, it's not just smaller mom-and-pop businesses. They want to eliminate Amazon.
Sure.
They want their biggest competitor, their biggest target is probably Amazon.
Interesting. Yeah. So what exactly are they planning here? What do they want Congress to do? Because they're throwing around... the counterfeiting term.
Yeah, so they're mixing, and this is the other thing to note in this story. They're mixing counterfeiting, and if that's not good enough for you to get you upset, well, certainly theft is going to be, right?
So they're mixing counterfeiting online with real life, like gangs of people going into stores yes. and stealing stuff like we're seeing in San Francisco.
Yeah. And no doubt, I'm sure, you know, there is a counterfeiting I guess there is to some degree a counterfeiting problem, and there's a theft problem, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think these are necessarily things that are not, you know, there's some truth to it, but that's not what they want to do is
no,
the
they
problem,
want regulations.
Right.
They don't
right.
want to let the free market operate and right. let people make their own choices.
Rather than, you know, installing better security, rather than taking steps to prevent the theft, they want the government to basically crack down on their competition. Their online competition. Passage of the so-called Informed Consumers Act would help retailers and law enforcement crack down on a significant uptick in organized theft.
When Amazon says, oh, we support this, that's them saying, well, we've got enough attorneys and programmers on staff to make sure we can implement it. If they haven't already implemented this, they can implement it with a snap of the finger, basically, whereas somebody who's just starting out, mm-hmm. who wants to, you know, revolutionize the space or whatever, and they're just getting going, they may not be able to jump through these hoops.
Well, right. And that's the other thing. It's like, okay, well, you know, what if I'm operating out of China as a small retailer and I want to sell to the mm-hmm. United States? I think that would undermine you know, that particular seller and their ability to profit off of that seller, you know, if they are not able to jump through those, you know, hoops right. for selling to the United States market.
Does a Chinese bank account count towards having a bank account?
How do you verify that? I don't know.
Do they have to have a U.S. bank account in order to sell on a U.S.
And honestly,
site?
I don't know. Maybe it does. Maybe it is broad enough where it makes it, you know, I don't know, for most of their customers, so that they're okay with supporting it. But I don't know. It just seems to me that this is just immoral, you know, for so many different reasons. You know, you shouldn't use, just because somebody else is using violence doesn't justify your use or advocation for violence.
No, it doesn't. But unfortunately, that's what you see all the time in the, you know, not just the retail world, but the business world, wherever some business is being regulated. They have the opinion of, well, I've been regulated, so you need to be regulated too. Quote, the Second Amendment is for everybody because having a gun, arming yourself, means you don't have to ask the other guy if you've got civil rights. And that's one that I'm sure hits home for nobody these days because, and I'm not sure where it came from, you know, whether it was before or after he became a felon. For selling cannabis to consensual adult parties that the FBI arrested him or had him arrested for, basically, in order to try to infiltrate to get him to wear a wire into the Keene Activist Center. He's now a felon because he took those charges to trial and went to a jury, and sadly the jury found him guilty because they didn't use jury nullification in that case, which was tragic. But now he's a felon, and so he doesn't have the right to defend himself with a gun, and he should. Yeah. I think everybody should, if that's what they want to do.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that we have a situation where we have so many laws that everybody is constantly breaking them, and if you become a target because the government wants to go after you because of politics,
yeah,
you know, because they'll of speech, you. Because of things you say, they'll find something.
They can,
yeah, because everybody's breaking the law.
One of the other things that's been in the news a lot in just the last year or so has been the metaverse. Now, you're a tech guy, Chris. You spend a lot of time in the tech field, but you focus more on the privacy, the operating system, sort of the lower level, critical level kind of operating aspects of running technology.
Definitely more low level, although it is focused on helping people at a higher level, I guess, but it's trying to make it easier for people, right?
Yeah.
These computers can be so complicated, and there's so many things that can go wrong. And if you can just plug a device in rather than, spending 45 minutes installing a driver to get a device to work and then hoping it works, well, that makes life so much easier for the end user. So, and that usually has to do with low level components. So that's why we focus on
low level
stuff.
Focus over at thinkpenguin.com, but I'm sure you still hear things about the higher level, the retail level kind of programming that's going on out there.
Oh, yeah.
Like this metaverse thing, which for listeners that aren't familiar, this is basically, my understanding of this is it's essentially virtual reality repackaged. It's essentially we're changing the name of virtual reality because virtual reality hasn't really been selling. And then big companies, big corporations like Facebook are getting behind it. Virtual reality news media that was covering virtual reality was just more of like look at this. Look at this, this cool gadget. Here's it's a neat gadget. You could get this gadget. But now they're literally saying, this is where you're going to work. This is where you're going to play. This is where you're going to shop. This will be your life, people, is essentially what they're saying about this metaverse thing. And now CNBC has a story, as other places have, that Facebook is now announcing that they're opening up their virtual reality world of avatars called Horizon Worlds to anyone 18 and older in the U.S. and Canada. According to the story, they've announced this as of Thursday. Horizon Worlds launched in beta last year to select Oculus VR users. Now, remember, Facebook purchased Oculus, the VR company, years ago, so they own that. And we kind of knew they were obviously going to be pushing more VR stuff, and now they've completely rebranded into essentially a VR company. That's why they call themselves Meta now. So Facebook is one of Meta's companies. Facebook is a, brand, if you will, of Meta. So with the announcement Thursday, users will no longer need to be invited to join the virtual world. The broader launch of Horizon Worlds is an important step for Facebook, which officially changed its name to Meta in October.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.